Welcome back to TRP.
Hi, welcome back to the Rosslare podcast. Today we're discussing the assassination of Martin Luther King and the man supposedly responsible, James Earl Ray. On the 4th of April, 1968, Martin Luther King was assassinated at the Lorraine Motel, Memphis. James Earl Ray was convicted of his murder in 1969. He pleaded guilty, knowing by doing so he could avoid the electric chair, and was subsequently sentenced to 99 years in prison. Who was James Earl Ray? He came from an Irish, Scottish, Welsh background. His mother's name was Maher. Having enlisted for the latter stages of World War II, he served some time in Germany, but struggled to adapt and was discharged for ineptitude, being drunk and disorderly, and lack of ability. I find it strange that yet he had the ability to shoot Martin Luther King with one single bullet. As a young man, he had many brushes with the law. In 1949, he was arrested for burglary. In 1952, he committed armed robbery of a taxi driver. In 1955, he committed fraud by stealing money orders in Hannibal, Missouri, and forging his name and taking trips to Florida. He was subsequently sentenced to 4 years in Leavenworth. In 1959, he committed an armed robbery of a Kruger store in St. Louis. He was subsequently sentenced to 20 years for repeated offences. He managed to escape from the Missouri State Penitentiary in 1967, hiding in a bread truck that was leaving the prison. He fled to St. Louis, then on to Chicago and up to Toronto, then Montreal. And what bothers me is, what passport did he use? Why he would want to return to America is a mystery, because he was risking the possibility of being arrested at the border. But he did just that. He managed to get to Birmingham, Alabama. He bought himself a 1966 Ford Mustang, which was a brand new car. And I asked the question again, where did he get the money? In the short time he spent in Alabama, he managed to get an Alabama driving license. Then he decided to head south to Mexico, where it's claimed he stopped off in the quaint little town of Puerto Vallarta. He tried his hand at making porn movies, filming local prostitutes. The films flopped and he split from his girlfriend, who apparently was a prostitute, and returned to the United States. In all, he spent less than 2 months in Mexico, and for all intents and purposes, it seemed like he was on holidays. He then headed back to America. Now, this is the second time he's crossed the border into the United States as a wanted man. Why would he do that? James Earl Ray returned to Los Angeles, having risked being arrested at the border, and began to attend bartender and dance classes. Apparently, at this stage, his chief interest was in George Wallace, who was campaigning to be President of the United States. It is rather conveniently mentioned that James Earl Ray was a racist and supported the platform of segregation upon which Wallace was running his campaign. Let's put this in context. James Earl Ray, a man who was on the run from the law, decides he would like to volunteer and risk working for Wallace. Now, this has a strange resonance with what happened to Lee Harvey Oswald when he handed out leaflets supporting Cuba prior to his supposed assassination of John F. Kennedy. It is suggested he considered emigrating to Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe, where the white minority had assumed independence from the United Kingdom in 1965. Reports say it was his intended destination after King's assassination. That begs the question, how long had he been planning to kill Dr. Luther King? Apparently, the Rhodesian government expressed their disapproval. I don't know what that means, to be honest. But on March the 5th, less than a month before the assassination took place, he underwent facial reconstruction. Yes, you heard me right. He underwent facial reconstruction. And I have to ask the question, why? Where did he get the money? The operation was performed by a physician by the name of Russell Hardley on March the 18th, 1968. After a week or two, he left Los Angeles and went to Atlanta, Georgia. He got himself a rooming house. Our equivalent would be a bed and breakfast. And when he arrived there, he bought a map of Atlanta. The FBI later found this map. What were they doing in his room? And why were they checking there? Did they have another patsy in their hands? They found, oddly enough, the church and residence of Dr. Martin Luther King circled on the map. Why would James Earl Ray not attempt to assassinate Dr. Luther King in his home? He knew his exact whereabouts. He was gone again, and this time he drove his Mustang to Birmingham, Alabama. There on March the 30th, 4 days before he shot Martin Luther King, he bought a Remington Model 760 Game Master .30.6 caliber rifle and a box of 20 cartridges. He was obviously rather confident. He bought the rifle from the Aero Marine Supply Company. He also bought a Redfield 2x7 magnification scope. Then he had it attached to his rifle. Now, this is not just sticking something on a gun. It has to be calibrated. So when was this done and how long did it take? We've got to remember that Martin Luther King's death was only 4 days after this initial purchase. If Ray was a volunteer for Wallace's campaign, where did he get the money to travel, to stay, to buy the gun and to move around? He told the shopkeeper he was going on a hunting trip with his brother. Apparently, he had continued with his alias Galt after the stint in Mexico. But when he purchased the gun, he gave the name Harvey Lohenmeyer. After the purchase of his gun and a new face, he returned to Atlanta. Apparently, he was reading the paper and read reports that King had planned to return to Memphis. It was scheduled for the 1st of April. The 1st of April was the next day. So, a day after King had arrived, he decided to leave for Memphis. So on April the 2nd, he now drove back the road he had driven only 2 days before to Birmingham and continued on to Memphis, a journey in excess of 400 miles. Don't forget, at the time, the speed limit on the interstate was 55 miles an hour, and he had to spend over 6.5 hours in the journey. He now had to find accommodation, but how did he pick the accommodation he did pick without knowing Dr. King's whereabouts and his movements? This he managed to do with supreme ease. How odd that James Earl Ray happened to find himself roomings across the street from the motel in which Martin Luther King was staying. I ask you in all sincerity, what are the odds of randomly finding a lodging room opposite the Lorraine Motel, and whose bathroom window faced out on the second floor balcony where Martin Luther King's room happened to be situated, so that when Martin Luther King stepped out onto the balcony, all James Earl Ray had to do was to stand in the bath and rest the rifle against the window ledge and fire one single shot. Despite the fact that he had a facelift, witnesses say shortly afterwards they saw Ray fleeing his rooming house across the street from the motel. And how convenient it was that they should uncover a rifle left close to the motel, and oddly enough found to have James Earl Ray's fingerprints. Wow, now that is a surprise. Apparently, James Earl Ray fled Memphis and the crime scene in his white Ford Mustang. He picked up his belongings, don't ask me where, and fled north to Canada, arriving in Toronto 3 days later. He hid for over a month and managed to get a Canadian passport under the false name of Ramon George Snide. He left Toronto in late May on a flight bound for London. Then he flew to Lisbon in Portugal, stayed for a short time and returned to England. Again, I have to ask, where was he getting the money to do all this? He then was arrested while trying to get on yet another flight, this time to Brussels. Apparently, his final destination was to be Angola, Rhodesia, or apartheid South Africa. Now, this is where it gets corny. Oddly enough, the name Ramon George Snide was on the wanted list of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. I swear I'm not making this up. Somehow, they discovered a second passport. This one was American. So they sent him back, not to Canada, as one might expect, but back to Tennessee, where he was charged with King's murder. He confessed to the crime almost a year later on the 10th of March 1969, on his 41st birthday. 3 days later, he recanted his confession. He believed by entering a guilty plea, he would save himself from the electric chair. Little was he to know that that wasn't necessarily the case. James R. Ray was later to claim the man he met in Montreal in 1967, who used the alias Raoul, had been deeply involved. He confessed he did not personally shoot King, but might have been partially responsible for his death without knowing it, sparking a, surprise, surprise, a conspiracy theory. He also claimed that he left the rifle in plain sight so it would be found. James Earl Ray was to spend the rest of his life trying unsuccessfully to withdraw his guilty plea. He died after 29 years of incarceration for a crime I find it hard to believe he ever committed. Who really did pull the trigger to silence Dr. Martin Luther King on April the 4th, 1968? I fear James Earl Ray was just another patsy in the dark, seedy underworld of American politics. If you ever look at the footage of the assassination of Martin Luther King, the witnesses are pointing somewhere higher than the second floor of the motel in which he was shot, not across the street. A special congressional committee said that there was a likelihood he had not acted alone. He also had the support of the most unexpected allies, the King family. Martin Luther King's son, Dexter, visited Ray not long before his death. He was sick and feeble from hepatitis C at the time. When asked if he had any involvement in his father's death, Ray replied to Dexter, "I had nothing to do with your father's killing." Dexter shook his hand and uttered the words, "I believe you." Keep on listening to TRP.